Greetings and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of February 21st, 2016. This is Jack Bressett Mills. I was able to talk to Carl up in the north. I think he was standing outside as we talked. But first, the verses for this week, ones I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul verses for his week 47. This first one I wrote 2 years ago, verse 47. Beneath the dark mysteries of this cold ground, I feel the joy of growth beginning to burst through. May the spirit of all things, which lives strongly in my thinking, make me ready to meet joy with joy. And this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse, verse 47a. I have a living hope that my imaginative thinking, with help from divine powers, will be ready to join this bounteous earth in its joy of new growth. Yeah, Carl, I haven't seen him lately, but I knew where he was, and I reached him. Here we go. Thank you very much, Carl. I know that Garrison Keillor famously thinks that smarter people are in the cold climates. I kind of feel that that's true. I grew up there myself. There's something about the cold that makes you have to think of survival techniques, at least, keep you on your toes.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
And especially as someone, I don't have a car. And so a bus. And so, yes, there is a survival element. Sometimes.
also the need for community. You really have to know your neighbors, and you have to rely on each other quite often.
Yes, yeah.
It's kind of elevating.
Yeah, I like that element of it. And people, I work at a coffee shop and people will come in and sometimes just if it's been really cold especially or like someone is struggling outside or something, they'll just come in and buy coffee for each other. And
great.
Yeah, that kind of thing happens, I think. It happens in Austin too, but it's more directed. There's a sense of like, yeah, we have to stick together to make it through this winter.
I mean, we might have more homeless people here just because it's more attractive. If you're out of work and you need to live on the street, you'd want to come to a southern city, I guess.
Somewhere where, that makes sense.
But
to me, I think that's why San Francisco is so popular.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Have you had any experience with this idea of pending coffee? That was trying to catch on. I tried to do my part.
What was it?
This idea of pending coffee, where someone will pay. They'll pay for the next.
Yes.
They'll pay for the next two or three people or whatever. When I don't know if you've tried that or you've seen it happening. It seemed to work a little bit.
Yeah. People have done that.
And you leave it in the hands of the barista to decide who gets the pending coffee. I don't think it's just the next person, but it's someone who needs
it. Yeah, there is an element of that. I think I work my coffee shops in a pretty ritzy part of town.
Oh, yeah.
And so people who come in generally have no trouble affording the very expensive coffee. So there isn't too much of that, but sometimes people will buy coffee and then bring it to someone outside who doesn't have a home or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do remember like hearing about that happening, though. I like that idea.
I liked how it made the barista feel because it gave them a little power. They're they're driven by the man like anybody else, and they've got to do their job. But if someone says, here, take this $10 and do what you think is best with it, that makes them feel kind of good. It makes the barista feel good.
Yes. Any acknowledgement that I am an equal with the customer is really nice. Working near downtown when people are on their way to work and they're thinking about all kinds of things that they think are important. And sometimes they're even talking on their cell phones while they're ordering. But whenever the opposite happens, it's sort of a treat.
It could be. I've often felt that it could be the loneliest thing to do is to be someone at a cashier somewhere where you're looking constantly at new people. And if they're none of them looking at you, it could be really terribly lonely.
Yeah, that I think something like that is, that is always the loneliest thing. Doesn't happen for too many people in a row.
Yeah.
Where I work, we have a lot of regulars.
Oh, good.
And so I've gotten to develop even little relationships with them.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And a few people have introduced themselves by name, and we go out of our way to say each other's names, which is a nice gesture. So I had someone come in and introduce himself to me. I introduced myself to him because I really liked him. He comes in and gets a small coffee and a refill ahead of time. And then he asks if we have fresh croissants that we made that morning. And if we do, he gets one. And if we don't, then he just sticks with the coffee.
Yeah.
And his name is Ahmed.
Yeah.
And the way he introduced himself was that he said, it's a sort of a different name. It's Ahmed. And I say, oh, no, that's one of the most common names in the world.
Good for you.
And he said, I think you're the first white guy to be able to pronounce my name.
It's,
was nice.
That's lovely. I was going to say, I've always felt you were one of the smartest people I knew as a young person. I was your teacher a little bit. And being in a place like that where you have time and interaction with people, are you thinking big thoughts while you're with them, or are you kind of meditating while you're with them? I would imagine you could do both. You could do the whole social thing where you're meeting new people and imagining their lives, but you could also be in the middle of big thoughts, that you're thinking big thoughts, and then the people kind of interrupt you because you've got these big thoughts going on.
I think that usually I'm either joking with my coworkers, all of whom I like a lot, or I think meditating is a good word for it.
Yeah.
A lot of the tasks that I have there are really repetitive, and I know them very well.
Yeah.
So I can just sort of do them and almost not think, a little bit, which is a nice thing to be able to reach.
Manual labor can really have
a
calming effect if you do it well.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a guy recently who had such a nice technique with the waves he developed in his pot of milk. Beautiful wave development, and then the way he would cause those waves to come over the edge was really quite nice. I love seeing that. Really nice.
Yeah, I've gotten to where I can. I can't do the big leaf art, but I can make a heart, and I can pretty consistently make a nice white circle on the top.
Yeah.
Which is kind of rewarding too.
Have you felt this weird thing? I've been noticing in the last couple of years. Maybe you've noticed it too. That this feeling of being having a purpose in life, that feeling can come from the dumbest little things like washing the dishes. You can really feel oh, my life has a purpose now, even though you just did a dumb little thing, but it's something you did and you wanted to do it and you did it and it makes you feel like you're alive in a certain funny way. I don't know if you've noticed, it seems kind of like a jip. Like, I thought purpose was something big. I thought purpose was big and important, but it could just be carrying wood or going to the store. Have you noticed that? It's kind of weird.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, that sounds right to me. That's funny. This isn't what they told me it was going to be like.
No, no. I mean, you get a depression if you're sitting around too much. And so you got to do something. But then the smallest thing you do, you start to feel okay again. It's really kind of weird.
Yeah, I sometimes get in these places where I live with three of my sons, and if none of them are home, I sort of expect at least one of them to be home. And so if no one is home, I sometimes get in these funks where I'll sit there and think for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that's some of the darker moments. And if I can get out of it and just, like, you know, go make myself a sandwich or something, then it goes away immediately.
Yeah.
Even if it's a small task.
Yeah. I mean, taking a walk is really quite an amazing thing compared to not taking a walk, compared to just sitting there.
Right.
We can get so dark. I can get so dark.
Yeah.
It's just the smallest thing. That's why I love manual labor. I've always loved manual labor. I'm a smart guy too, but I just love hauling wood. I love going to get some wood and cutting it up. Do you guys have fires? Do you guys have wood fires, or is it all electric heat and gas heat, that kind of thing?
We have electric heat in my home.
So that's not an outlet then for a feeling of accomplishment, then you can't go out and get your wood today.
No. The first time we met our upstairs neighbors, we built a little fire in the back. It was October and it was, you know, 40 degrees at night or something.
Yeah.
And that was fun to have something to do with them.
Yeah. Yep.
As we got to know them.
Yeah.
But otherwise it's been electric heat. Yeah, I think a lot of the rewarding parts of my barista job are just restocking things.
Right.
If I see, you know, just the process of recognizing that something, that we need more of something, and then knowing that I know where it is, and going to get it with my own self and my own body, and then coming back and putting it there.
It
looks full again, you know, it's nice.
You can totally imagine that's, if you were talking to the greatest, most advanced Zen master, they would be exactly the same, they would have said exactly the same thing. they would have exactly said the same thing, that's what they love. They love the way that they can get up and they can go over and they can organize over there. And
yeah, I think that came... I think that's always been something that I just have known naturally as a rewarding thing to do, having gone to a Montessori school for most of my young life. It's a big part of the curriculum to use your hands, and with Waldorf too, obviously, to use your hands and interact with your environment a lot directly.
I mean, just to make things a little better. And then the art feeling, the feeling of art, that can even come with organization. That can even come with lining things up and putting things in order. Even though another person might say, well, that's not art, you can still feel it yourself.
Yeah, I like to think that some of my drinks that I make are art.
Yeah.
Just because I made the ratios exactly right.
Yeah.
Although, a lot of art has recently, like, obviously, this is a very broad statement, so stay with me. A lot of the art in the last 100 years,
right,
I think, has been focused on breaking things apart and then just seeing how that feels. So I think that's an interesting thing to say. that putting things in order can be art too.
I almost think it, the word can apply to the object that you did, the human being did something, and then that the thing they did is the art. But I think it's more appropriate to talk about the activity itself of the doing. And in that sense, standing well and moving well is an art.
Yeah.
And it really just matters how you feel about what you're doing. If you feel like you're doing it well and you're enjoying yourself as you do it, it's almost, that's the definition right there, is that you are, at least in your own mind, you're feeling like an artist. And it's not up to us to tell you you're wrong. You feel it yourself.
I think that, yeah, this is good. That's something that I think about a lot, because I struggle with whether to consider myself an artist, I think, because I frequently, like, I hang out with a lot of people who are artists in more traditionally understood ways, like actors and dancers and painters.
Yeah.
And my art is, has to do with music, and so it's a little bit misleading, because I say that I'm, you know, I would like to be part of an arts organization as my, that's part of my life that I get my money from. And I say, in music in particular, and they say, oh, are you a musician? And I say, no, I like to think about and talk about and write about music and why it's important. And I consider my art to be sort of appreciation.
Yeah.
And appreciation's not usually thought of as an art itself.
I mean, we do raise criticism up to an art. People who are employed by New York Times to be a critic.
That is true, yes.
And it's exactly what you're talking. It's exactly what you're talking about. They totally appreciate the art they're critiquing, but they do have a turn. Yeah. They do have a good turn of phrase, though. I do think you need a little bit of a, as you do. I've seen your writing. You have a good turn of phrase. You have an artistic way of speaking about your appreciation.
Well, thank you.
But
yeah.
I don't think it, I mean, the job of everybody else is to tell you you're not an artist and go back to work. You know, that's everybody's job. And it's your job to say, screw that. You know, that it's up to me what I think of as an art. Every artist that ever came along had to fight against that. And so if you're fighting it too, then you must be right in with them.
That's a good way to look at it. I'm all about the screw them mentality.
Whoever
they're
they are.
More like.
Yeah, whoever they are.
Yeah, all of them, you know.
Yeah.
With a capital T.
I mean, you see the general public. Do you think you're seeing a higher or middle or a lower slice of the public? Or are you seeing a pretty wide slice of the public at your work?
I think that I see a few small slices.
Depending on the time of day or something, maybe.
Yeah, a little bit of that. I think, you know, well, part of what's hard about this is that I don't actually know that much about these people.
Yeah.
I'm basing my answer on what part of town we're in and what they look like, essentially, which is always dangerous. But I think that most of the people who come in either are entrepreneurs and freelance people and sort of own their own business, and therefore they can work from wherever they want.
Yeah.
And they choose my coffee shop.
Yeah.
So those are the people who get mugs and stay. And the people who get to go cups are going to work in big buildings downtown to do complicated things that I don't understand with money and hypothetical money and things like that.
Yeah.
And,
I suppose everybody who wants coffee is trying to think a little more clearly. I think coffee is generally yeah. considered to be helpful for thinking. They're not trying to be quiet about everybody, and they're trying to shut off the world. They're trying to get a better grip on the world, I think. So,
in that sense, I think, well,
no?
Yes, and most of them have that in common.
I mean, a beer joint would be different, I think.
Then there are some people, so an interesting neighborhood I'm in, that my work is in, used to be sort of more of a seedy area.
Okay.
But it's also become sort of gentrified recently.
Yeah.
But it hasn't kicked that part of the environment out. So we do get dances from next door sometimes. And, you know, other people who work there.
I mean, you can probably tell at a glance whether someone is enjoying their life at the moment. If they're.
Yes. Yep. A lot of that has to do with how they interact with me also.
Yeah.
If they absolutely just see me as a necessary pleasantry that is standing between them and their coffee, then I can tell they're not having a good time.
Yeah. In general, I'm sure. Yeah, in general.
Right.
Not exactly. Just that moment.
And,
yeah.
And if they ask how I'm doing back as though they actually want to know, then that means I think that they're maybe doing better, or they're at least open to doing better soon.
I was going to say that if you have an interest in the world, including who you're talking to, it usually means you're at least enjoying life a little bit. You're at least trying to enjoy life if you have a little interest.
Right.
I mean, coffee has that quality that I seek coffee when I wish to have a little more awakeness, a little more interest. I'm not trying to shut up the world when I have a cup of coffee. I'm trying to see it a little more clearly, usually.
My relationship with coffee has become that way as well. Before, I didn't really drink coffee until I started working at Dun Brothers Coffee.
Yeah.
And, now I have learned what too much coffee feels like, and I've learned what a really nice amount feels like. And I've started, unfortunately, to also learn what no coffee feels like, right. Which is not something I knew about until I knew what the other two felt like.
Yeah. And the real sad thing is when you're ill and you can't drink coffee, you get an extra whack because your brain wants the coffee, and it even makes it worse.
Yeah.
It's really right.
It dehydrates you a little bit.
Rotten. You should know, though, that the little drug called aspirin has caffeine in it. It's actually got caffeine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, anyway.
Interesting. Sometimes I think about some of the big thoughts that I have to do with where the coffee came from
and
how little I know about that.
Yeah, who picked it?
Right.
I think it's a human activity to get it off the vine, off the plant.
It is. It totally is. And to carry the bags, I have no idea how far back to wherever.
And it's tropical environments. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, exactly. In what are inherently very human places.
Yes. Yeah, Africa.
And, it's easy to, we say, we have exchanges like, what kind of coffee are you brewing? Oh, Colombia and Rwanda. Okay. And it's easy to sort of distance yourself from what that actually means, that those beans came from, literally the opposite side of the world.
Yep.
And people are just like expecting us to have those beans that came from the opposite side of the world. And sometimes if we're brewing more and we don't have that for like two more minutes, they get sort of frustrated that they don't have this amazing thing that they should be just totally
I know
enthralled by.
I mean, we can go overboard with that. When you're walking home at night with somebody and they're sad about something, you could say, how can you be sad? Look at the planets and look at the stars.
Right.
We have to have sympathy for people, of course, but you're right, though.
I mean, I do that too, but
yeah.
I'm generally happy when I work.
But many
I'm
of these...
I'm usually thinking about other people's experiences more than my own, like we've already touched on.
But most of these places, like... you mentioned Rwanda, Colombia. When's the recent bloodbath there? When's the recent revolution there? When's these tropical places have a lot of play from the superpowers over time, and we've fomented a lot of revolutions in these places. And my goodness, yeah.
Good point.
But it's great to think about those. Yeah, big thoughts. I was playing with one the last couple of weeks. I wanted to tell somebody about it. I might as well tell you. I hope someone has thought this thought. To get some kind of satellite that would scoop up other satellites that are waste. You know, there's all this waste up there. And then to be a little factory that can turn the waste satellites into something useful. What's useful up there? Well, I've always heard, you must have heard this too, that if we could get a cable to go from orbit down to the ground, it could be like an elevator. If it was there, if it was already there, it would totally stay by itself because the spinning Earth would cause it to keep tight. But we can't ever get a cable that long because it's too heavy. We can't get a rocket to take it up there and lower it. Too heavy. So if he had some satellite up there, it would be scooping up all these old satellites, and it would be making cable, and then lowering it down over time. Finally, it reaches ground, and then we've got this elevator. We don't need rockets anymore. We can just go up the cable.
That sounds kind of nice.
Anyway, that's kind of a dumb idea, but I hope somebody's thought of it, and they said, "Oh no, that'll never work."
And figured out that we can. Yeah. At least tried that.
Yeah. But
I like the idea of asking what's useful in space.
Yeah. What can you do with it?
It makes you realize that it becomes even more clear than usual that useful is totally indexical to, like, who you're talking about or what your goals are.
Yeah, like land that's useful, that beautiful, pristine wilderness that's not useful for anything. You got to put Walmarts in there, and you got to put, anyway, useful. You're right. But big thoughts for yourself then too, like you're talking a couple. If you're simply say you're an artist, then you are one, and if you are interested in people, you're probably happier.
That reminds me, I just did my top 25 albums of last year.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is always like, after a lot of work and sort of like obsessing over it, I have a product.
Yeah.
Which is also really nice as a process. One of the artists in there is Kurt Vile, and I think he might be one of those types of people. But he doesn't look like you think that type of person might look.
Okay.
He looks kind of like a long-haired, like, spacey stoner guy.
Okay.
But I imagine that he's the kind of guy who's, like, mostly quiet and really shy and just likes playing his guitar. And in high school, he would every once in a while, he might have not done so well in school, but he would speak up every once in a while and say something really important, and everyone would go, wow. Okay. And that's sort of what his lyrics sound like, too, which I really like. And they're not always, like, grandiose, but they're just... like, it sounds like it's important stuff.
I love that. That's what being friends with someone can do, is you know what they're good at, and nobody else maybe knows what they're good at. You know, but it's not their public thing. It's their public thing is go here, go there, do that. But then at 10:30, they pull out something and they do something, and you go, my God, man, that's cool. I knew this one guy. I had this friend once. He showed me that he pulled out this hat, and he just started talking about this hat. It was like it had a brim. It was a wool hat with a brim. And he started doing stuff with it. And my God, he was a master of this hat. It made no sense whatsoever. But he had spent decades, it looked like to me, that he was just getting so good at manipulating this hat around, and it could do anything. He was a master of a hat, and nobody knew it about him. I knew it finally. We can surprise our friends with our abilities that nobody realizes.
Yeah. Right. I like that idea of friendship.
Well, Carla, wonderful to hear your voice. Thank you for talking with me.
Yeah. It's been fun. This kind of stuff makes me feel like I'm useful. How's that?
I like that.
Okay.
Thank you, Carl. Best wishes.
Yeah, best wishes to you.
Bye-bye.
Have a good rest of your day.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks again, Carl. That was great. Nice talking with you again. And thank you for listening. Come back next week if you could. Leave me a line if you have any interest at reasoningwithanoptimist.net. I'd love to receive your comments. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Bye-bye.